lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class!
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
Liam, it's a weird week. It's in the middle of the Six Nations. It's a big north-south derby in Cape Town. And we've got a special guest tonight. So, yeah, a huge week for rugby, even though there's not much other rugby going on in South Africa.
Well, for our guest, we might as well tell our listeners and our viewers who that guest is. It's Stormers Director of Rugby, John Dobson. So it's a big week for him and for the franchise because this is an opportunity to get back on the bike, as it were, and get the campaign, give it a bit of a kickstart because they haven't been that successful on the road. They are, however, unbeaten at Cape Town Stadium, and they're hoping, starting this weekend, to turn that into a bit of a fortress, as it proved a few years ago on their way to the championship, the inaugural championship. But it needs to start this week.
Well, they don't really have much room to maneuver because if they don't do it this week, then then their top eight position is also in doubt, and they've got a lot riding on this game. The Bulls are just as desperate. They want to break their duck in Cape Town for the first time in the URC. So they've got a lot to play for. Also, but depleted injuries, both teams. So it's going to be very interesting. But yeah, let's go straight into our interview with the one and only John Dobson. Always a character, always somebody to chat to. And looking forward to this, Liam.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the big derby week. It's north-south, the one that really gets us going. And special guest today, all the way from Cape Town, John Dobson, coach of the Stormers. Dobbo, welcome. Welcome back. It's not your first time on the pod. It's always good to have you here.
Thanks, Brennan. Thanks, Liam. Thanks for having me back. Scared of what I'm going to say because you two do give me the chat. So I'm going to say anything that's going to go up on the Bulls team wall. But it's great to be on this podcast. So it's proving very popular rugby one in South Africa. Well, it is the popular one in South Africa. So thank you for having me.
No, thanks.
I think Brendan and I have both written stuff in the past that have gone up against the Bulls.
Especially me. So, yeah. I was going to ask you, Dobbo, my first question is quite an easy one. Are you looking forward to seeing your mate, Jake?
Question, Brendan.
I think they won the last game. I think there's rivalry. It's great. From what I spoke to our head office today, we'll sell out, it looks like, quite comfortably. For an ordinary league game, and a lot of that's to do with the hype of North South Bulls, Dobbo, Jake. It's a lekker occasion. I won't be saying that on Saturday afternoon at 1:30 when I'll be self medicating with by that. But I think it's great for sport. It's great. This rivalry is great for sport. So I'm not sure we'd have a beer, but I'm looking forward to seeing them.
What is your capacity now with all the banners and stuff over seats and all kinds of things in the stadium? What is your capacity?
Okay, I think we'd take some pride in the fact that we're the one team that's ever done that.
We don't do that.
We sold out for the Sharks game on the 28th of December, literally sold out, and we'll sell out this week. And that's about 55,000. So that's great for a game. And I think we'll get there with the new ownership, but we're not the best. We haven't got beach parties and Cucumber Zoo, or do they even still exist? I don't know. Mikasa playing and water slides and a million complimentaries. We're very much old school in terms of come and watch the. They are improving the outside match experience a lot. But yeah, I think to sell out twice in what would it be, 5 weeks for local, their local derbies, they're not league games, but it's brilliant. I think we are the most supported team in URC in terms of the crowd attendance, and that's great. We just need to get some better results and hopefully go better.
I suppose you also have enough going on around the stadium within the kilometre or 2 km around the stadium. So
that is a huge advantage. I'd imagine that's an advantage. Certainly advantage. Certainly different to Ellis Park, isn't it?
It depends what your tastes are.
Yeah, if I was going to say, if I was looking for a bumper for my Ford Cortina.
Yeah. There used to be a place called Vegkop. It was a bar down the road about 500 metres away. And it was called Vegkop for a reason.
Is it still going? Is it still...
Not as far as I know. I haven't been there for years.
But it does. They actually look at the FL Stadium. They look at, obviously, they can monitor which gates people are coming in. And what's been a big trend away from, as rugby's taken more of a stronger hold in that stadium, is more and more people coming from what would be the northeast corner, which is the waterfront. And so it's a pretty compelling environment in a great part of the town. So that certainly helps a lot.
No, I was going to say, to me, it's great that the north-south derbies are this welcome tested. And last year, the Bulls were sold out as well. So hopefully this trend continues. It becomes like El Clasico around South African rugby or URC rugby. So that's great to me. I suppose, the one player I think you're probably missing in the Bulls game the most is probably Marnie, because he tends to, every single time, and Jake said it this morning when I spoke to him, he said the one player they have he's not playing is Marnie's, because he always tends to play his best game against the Bulls.
Yeah, it's true.
Yes, he plays really well in that game. I think maybe because it's a place where he comes from, he wants to prove that they shouldn't have. I don't know the circumstance of how he left, because when he came to us, he actually came from the Sharks. But yeah, Marnie, Warwick, they tend to perform in those sort of games. But yeah, tough for us without three playmakers really in three potential fly-offs, Marnie, Warwick, and it's not a big problem, Marnie, Damien, and Sasha. But yeah, that's what it is. We're going to have to fight. I think this bemoaning of injuries, it's just part of the sport now. And whether that number your given week is 8 or 4, but the scoreboard's not going to say Bulls 16, Stormers 12, but Marnie, Sasha, Damien, Ruan, whoever, Sivabella were injured. It doesn't say that. So it's something we've just got to get used to. I think coaches banging on all the time about who's unavailable. It's literally the nature of the sport now. And look at the Sharks. They spike up to an 8 or 9. We've spiked up to an 8 or 9. Then you drop down to a 4. The Bulls are at a sort of mini spike now as well. It is a sport. It's not an excuse of any form.
And also, there's not much time to dwell on it, because you now have to roll up your sleeves to secure yourself a spot in the top 8. I have a suspicion, though, you're probably looking a little bit high, not just top 8, but if you look at, if you run the numbers, have you plotted a way out of the situation you find yourself in? Because obviously you have to win your home games. Yeah. I'm now looking at what your points tally, the points tally you rattled up previously, and you were 61, 68, something like that. Now, you're obviously not going to get to 61 even, I doubt it.
No, I think...
Top 4 spot would be difficult.
Top 4 spot is very difficult, I think. Look, we can say that Leinster game, we should have got that. Not that we deserve to win it. We absolutely deserve to lose it. And we deserve to lose it by more. But that could have given, that was probably our hope of that. We think, Liam, if we can get to 57, 58 around there, you probably don't want to be playing Leinster away in the quarterfinal. And that would be at the Viva, where we played Leinster B and got a hiding there 2 weeks, 10 days ago. So, yeah, we think we can get to 58. We have to win 2, which is going to be very tough. We have to win 2 of these 3 local derbies. So you're right, the home game, and then 1 of 2 others, which are very hard. Ellis Park and Loftus. So one of those, we probably have to win at least 1 of the 2 on the road, Ulster and Clonakilty. And then we've got, after that, we actually got a really good run. But we're anticipating getting a, it's like in our first year. But I do suspect there have to be at least two home wins to guarantee above a, you want to come in like last year where you play a reasonable team in the quarterfinal, like Glasgow, where I think we came quite close. Top 4 is impossible, but then it's pretty much you have to go unbeaten from now on. And that, saying you can win at Ellis Park, you have to win at Belfast, you have to win at Clonakilty, you have to win at Loftus. Yes, that's all. That's probably Greenland given our personnel position at the moment. And you ran the article yourself this week, and we haven't, I think since URC1, we actually plus 1 player, and that's way off where the other teams are. When I say plus 1 player, like a real marquee player that you didn't have in URC1, we had Warwick, we had Gutsy. JD Schickling is probably the big name that we've brought in over the last, if you look from Greg, compared to URC1, Ruben van Heerden wasn't really a marquee, and Marvin Ory left, and I know lots of the Bulls and the Sharks have both let players go, but certainly we're way behind underspending and that for the reasons that Johan has made clear, that we need to be sustainable first. But with our personnel to say that we're going to go unbeaten from here on in, it's just not true. It's not going to happen, unfortunately.
But it also makes just sense that if you use the word sustainable, but you have all the building blocks on the fertile ground in the Western Cape. There are some really talented players down there, and it's just obviously a question of retaining those services.
Yeah, that's exactly it. As soon as we get this project, I think, Brendan, we used to talk in the dark days of Zeltdown about if Western Province, I think people have talked about other, who they talk about internationally. They always said internationally before the Springboks did, the Springboks got organized. And I felt like the same applies here, whether we our feeder system to keep the players, all our stars that are playing around the country, quite a few of them playing on Saturday, I presume. And so we're playing for the Bulls. So who were born here, schooled here, or university here. So that's what we have to get right. We're making progress with guys like Marcel Tiennesen, and I know they don't come from me originally, but they came as kids. Marcel and Andre Henrique Fenter and them and Suleiman Hartzenberg all getting towards 50 caps, which is important. That's how we're going to grow. We're not going to be a team that, we wouldn't have gone out to the market and got Kobus Reinach if Herschel and Paul had stayed or didn't leave at the same time. So that just was just such a big gap that we had to fill. But if we get organized this pipeline properly, which I think other unions have benefited from over the years, look, you can never keep everybody. If you look at the number eight, so you've got Frank Horner at the Lions from Parboy's Eye. His successor there was Evan Roos. His successor there was Cameron Honeycomb. Now, you're never going to keep, let's say we kept Frank Horn. Evan Roos then would have gone, well, he did go to the Sharks at first. If we had Evan Roos, if you were Cameron Honeycomb, would you sign at the Stormers if thinking? So that's always going to be a bit of a challenge for us. But if we properly organize, we can identify better. We're going to restart an institute. We're going to take a view that we've got 3 years to keep this team together and build it and try and allow us to go deep into Europe rather than being a team that's going to write out big checks. I haven't told you directly, we're not going to go that route. We're just going to have to identify and get the talent through here. And every year, this union is just incredible. I know he hasn't played much, but JC Mars, Devon Fuller, these guys are just coming through. Paul de Villiers is a bit older. These guys, Johnny Roach, they just come through the grown trees in the Western Cape. So we do have an advantage there in that respect.
So, well, I was going to ask, part of the problem, though, for me, if I look at bringing through the younger players, and we know none of the franchises are going to be able to bring back too many players from it. You bring back the odd one or two, like the Kobus Visas or JD Schickelings, those type of players, but you have to develop your own players. But part of their problem is outside your main 25-odd players, the next 25, they're not really getting opportunities. And we've seen it with you guys when you had to go up in the Champions Cup. The Bulls, when they went to the Sharks, those guys, and Nizam Carr said to me that week, he said, the problem is he hasn't played since the Curry Cup. Now suddenly they're going to go beat Cust in France, and he hasn't played for 4 months. And I think that's the problem with all the franchises. And I just, how do you overcome that?
No, you Brendan, this is, you're absolutely spot on. So we've got these on the books, on the roster, these 55, 57, 53 players. I think all the franchises will be in the 50s. And let's say you've got 10, unfortunately, injured, takes you to the mid-40s, and you're choosing 23 every week. And so they're 20, half your squad's not playing every week. And the Curry Cup's down that different slot. Actually worked, I think, from a coaching point of view, it worked well 2 years ago when it was played the same time as the URC, because you have guys game ready. It really helped a lot. You could, but now, for example, with our lock situation, Connor injured, JD injured, Gary Porter is going to have to come in, and he might come into the, 90% sure he's going to be on the bench this week. And yeah, I don't know when Gary last played the game. And so we can get friendlies. We can play Boerland, and I'm sure the Bulls can play Griquas or the Falca, and we'll play the universities and they can play Tuckies and that, but it's not quite the same. So this is a challenge that we're paying a lot of players, but we can't not have them, because you've got to have a fourth hooker. You've got to have four tight ends. So that numbers just get to the 50s easily. But those guys aren't getting any better. So I actually would prefer the Curry Cup back in now. This thought, or we have to have another form of Vodacom Cup, for which there'll be very little commercial argument or support. Or we must enter the SA Cup. But the problem is a Bulls B team would probably do very well in the SA Cup and the smaller unions we marginalize. So I actually don't know the solution, but it's bad at the moment, Brent. It's really... So I look at all our players' game time, and you've got a guy like Ruben van Heerden on 1,000-odd minutes in a season, and you look down, there's one guy with 12. It's poor. Scar and Tabin's on 12 minutes this season. It's poor.
I actually forgot about Scar. It's weird because he's not a guy you normally can forget. Away from you've got a new role as well as director of rugby since we last spoke to you. I think you just got into it then. And you said to us just before we started recording, you're a lot more relaxed now. Tell us a bit more. How has it made your life a bit better coming into that role? We obviously remember the dark days of Zelf Maria, as you said. But other than that.
The thing is, we kept this place together and it was tight. It was really tight. And I think it's well known how often I was called into board meetings and that sort of thing, and to account and various levels of mismanagement and interference. And then we went into administration and by SA Rugby. And that was, I knew it was temporary, but it did allow us freedom of operation. And I think other unions are probably irritated because SA Rugby underwrote us that we could pay our salaries. But why I'm saying relaxing is we've got a really mature ownership now. It's we, you, both of you have been around long enough to know Western Province has been, even before, for a long time, a very political, unsettled union. To have the Stormers, to have it guys developing with a top ticketing system on the kit or the travel or that, and the defined budgets and the much better infrastructure, the training facility and diets. It just feels like we and the guy with a 3-year plan to make us to build a team that's competitive in Europe, admittedly, without going to write big checks for players from outside. It just feels like these guys, they're not taking a short-term view. I think they would like, and I also would have liked a few couple of better results this season. But I say it's more relaxed. And also, we're going to reopen an institute. I'm sure that will happen. Institute, our recruitment's going to get much better. It's a much more professional organization than we were. So, yeah, no, it doesn't give me a free ticket in terms of results. But I think the combining of the roles, and I think it was about, I want to have the Stormers to look like a certain environment. I think you've got a director of rugby and a head coach, then there's a case you don't have that. You don't have that alignment of what you're trying to do in the organization, which is grow our own talent. That I think at some stage I'll have to choose. I think you can't do both forever because 21's recruitment and the institute will become a bit much. But at the moment, we wanted the sort of initial phase. It made sense to make sure we got the right culture and environment in the high performance, in the Stormers side of things. But yeah, it's wonderful to have supportive owners. I know the Sharks are pretty blessed with that. I know the Bulls are. It's made a huge difference. Just so I'm used to it. I'm sure at some stage they're going to want better results. But they are of the view that the squad, and Liam, you wrote this, that it's going to be a while before we're going to invest heavily in the squad. And probably happen organically. So you can't have that and then expect to have the strongest to be in the European Cup semifinals. It's just, but there's a plan, and there's a 3-year plan, which is great because it keeps me at work for a while.
But then also, if you develop that culture, obviously you're breeding from within, but then from the outside, for players looking in from the outside, Cape Town then becomes a destination of choice if you are going to make a move somewhere.
Yeah, that's, I think, one of the biggest things that have helped us is Val d'Avis. As much as I don't like golf estates, I can't play golf, and there are a lot of Springboks in Val d'Avis, more in there than in Makwela. And those guys want to come live there. And if you're going to play rugby and you live in Val d'Avis, I'm being flippant. So the fact that Cape Town is I'm not being untruthful, but Cape Town's a world-class city. And I think the fact that they've got a team that's a team that's well administered in a great stadium, it's really, the phone rings. We were dialing around. I made a joke. Pep Storrs in 2021, trying to find anybody who's prepared to come and risk playing in Cape Town. We might not get paid. The salary was discounted. The team was average. So now with the phone's ringing, just the whole time to say, can you have it? So, yeah, it's just a much, much nicer position to be in. But there's a lot of people want to come and play at the Stormers now, which is great. And I'm not saying because it's not because of the team, it's because of Cape Town, the environment. It's not just because of the city, not because of the coaching, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I'm not going to say, I think it is because of the coaching. You used to say yourself, sure. Got to give you a compliment here. They also say, yeah, fish rots from the head. So, when things go bad, they blame the guy at the top. So you got to take the credit as well. There's some other youth.
My anxiety won't let me do it. So I haven't opened the URC log this week, but we are about 12th or 13th or something. I already opened the log a bit better, but we will make it short.
Well, I think you are above the Lions still, and I think, if I'm right, and I think you didn't have a player that left there this week as well, yeah, for Japan, so.
Actually, the way to look at it is not so much to draw comfort from the fact that you're ahead of the Lions. It's like there's a couple of teams ahead of you. You'll then see the names and think, why are we below these teams? They're imminent.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's what I think. We will put together a little bit of a charge. We will put together a little bit of a charge. Yeah. I'll be disappointed if we finish below Cardiff or Scarlets. Then I think our ownership would be fully entitled to ask me to come in for a little chat.
Well, I still can't believe there's two Welsh sides in the top eight. So there's one that you don't expect either. So that will change in the next couple of weeks. Are you going to have a quiet drink before the game for the nerves? And then after the game, if you do get another one over Jake, how are you going to celebrate?
You know me too well about the Friday nights, Brendan, because you've seen the – we've tapered those down. Because as you get older, the anxiety for the chemicals of anxiety, you like your wine, that increases, doesn't it? So when you get a big day. So we'll go for a long lunch on Friday just to try and forget about the game. And then, do you remember Gareth Chalcott, the bath prop? I mean, that English prop with a sash. And they said to him, when he retired, what is he going to do? He's going to have six quiet beers and then 12 noisy ones. So if we did burglar win, that'll be a formula. But listen, I God, there's no ways you can with the we. It's going to be an unusual looking Stormers team. I think our pack is robust and big and solid, the starting one. But there will be some fresh faces amongst the bats, and it's going to be a hell of a test. But yeah, I don't know what it's like to play in front of 55,000. How many Cape Townians screaming at you? I don't know what effect that'll have, but it might help us stay in the game and give us a chance of snatching something.
I was going to sneak in the last one. I'm going to ask, how do you prepare for Willy the Roux? Because he's also one of those players like Marnie who can blow hot and cold on any given day.
That's actually something that's come up in the coaches' meetings. We don't know what position he's going to play. And there are three. He made a massive difference at Ellis Park. There's been talk of him at 10, I think, which is challenging. I do, honestly. I think it's very similar to Marnie there. Well, not similar player. Marnie might do more breaks and stuff, but his distribution and X factor there is incredible, or if he's playing at 15. So that Willy issue is an issue for us because we don't know where he's going to be. But we have to plan. Look, the bench, you don't have to plan for the bench, but we've got to plan for 10 and 15 because they tell too much, but they're not dissimilar. So whatever plans they're probably making for Marnie would have been making for Marnie, probably the same ones we're making for Willy at 10.
Well, it keeps us all up. No, I don't think so. He wasn't training
before. No, of course not. Of course not. It started four tests on the wing, so it's on the
scene. They start four tests on the wing? Really?
Yep. Started four. To be fair, it was in his first year, so all of those will be in 2013.
Okay.
In fact, I think one of those standout performances, the game against the Wallabies in Brisbane.
Yes, I was there,
standout
performance. Yeah, Zane Kirshner was at fullback that one, yes. No, I remember it. Yeah, now, no, but at least it keeps us engrossed and gives us something to talk about. Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating game on Saturday. I think our nerves will be better than yours. So, but good luck. I hope it's a great game, and I hope there's no injuries, whatever happens.
That's very kind of you. I hope rugby's a winner. I hope the storm is off. They can have my 12 noisy ones. We'll see. That's good looking. For all the nerves and hype, it's great for South African sport that we could fill out, have a derby like this. You're right, because do you remember, sorry to drag you on, but we all witnessed the demise of Super Rugby from the Super 12. And one of the arguments for the conference system was the local derbies. And they completely petered out, didn't they? They completely, and that's one thing the URC, I don't know if it's just have done, is got these back. And I think it's fantastic. Yeah, it doesn't make for say. I'd have started self-medicating on Friday at about 2, but it's good for rugby.
We'll chat to you soon. We'll probably see you when you're up here in Pretoria in a couple of weeks and see if you.
I will just agree. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Thanks, Ed. It's really cheers.
Now, it wouldn't be right if we do the one side of the fixture, not the other side. So while we didn't have Jake on as a guest this week, I did catch up with him this morning. And had a bit of a chat to him about just going to Cape Town and trying to win there. So I posed a couple of questions to him. So have a listen.
Jake, obviously the Storm is going to be desperate with their log position.
So are we.
Yeah, I know. Were you expecting that from them? Obviously, they can't afford to lose it as well. So.
Well, that's what's so nice about derbies. We've been in a situation as well, Bryn. We've played them a few times in a row now. I'm talking about the last couple of years where we were also desperate and we never got a win. So, but saying that, I said to someone now coming here that when the Bulls and the Stormers is the big game of the year and we're doing our jobs, then we're doing something right. The day that people don't talk about the North South Derby as the big one means that we're not doing our jobs. And all I hear now is there's 40,000 tickets sold. And that makes me happy because it means that people still see the North-South Derby as one of the big clashes in the calendar. And so we also want to be desperate to win. We want to finish as high up as we can because we know what home ground advantage means in the back end of the competition. And therefore, we need to win these games as well. So it's going to be an interesting clash and I'm looking forward to it.
Anything different that you're doing? You guys haven't had that much success in Cape Town. You've got the monkey off the back last year.
Yeah. Try to find another hotel, to be honest, and I don't mean that in a way. We thought maybe we change a lot of other things that are happening in and around Cape Town that don't make it that easy. And that was just something we discussed. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong. We just thought maybe there might be a way in changing the stimulus a little bit. I'm not superstitious at all because we've never played the Stormers first week in February when we third on the log and they 12th. Never played the Stormers when we haven't had a 10 that we could start with. We've never played the Stormers without their number one lock and their number one fullback in Damian Willemsa. So to be superstitious and go, we need to change this, we need to change that because it's not working as I said, the venue is probably the same, but it's a completely different game.
Just that you don't have both your captains for this game, and I'm not sure who else is not available. But
no, those two aren't. Brendan, one thing that I've said to you guys many times, and you've been with me for a long time now, is Robbie's is captain, Marcel's captain, Ludwig's captain, Nazamka's captain. So we're not in a situation where we won't have leaders on the field. I'm comfortable that whoever takes the armband is going to get help from the other three or other four that are on the field. And don't believe it's just the captaincy that's going to win it this week. It's going to be everyone on the same page.
Yeah, just Jake, obviously reports on the weekend that you guys are trying to sign Vidi again on that. Just after his performance at Ellis Park, the fly-off situation. Just your thought process going into this weekend.
Yeah, let me just say, Brent, we didn't want to re-sign him. The bottom line is he had an option to leave. And I think what's happened is he's probably rethought about the fact that he might want to keep the option of staying here. And we're over the moon about that because it wasn't our call for him to leave. It was just an option of 2+1. If you want to stay, we'd like you to. And if you don't, then we understand. And as it's turned out, it's not formal yet, but I think I get the feeling he would like to maybe look at an option of staying. And that's fantastic. I know he jokes about it because he says Flav's earn more than Ubeck's. So again, he'll have to go and see Edgar and work out what Flav's get that play fullback, because I'm not sure if it's the same as if you're Flav that plays Flav. But last week he turned the game on its head. He's different 2 weeks ago. He's definitely, we know what he offers us. We know how good he is. We know when he's on song how important he is to us. And I think we get the rubber stamp by signing him, because now we need him to go into that position and no one's concerned about it. You know, in fact, people are excited about the fact that he could play 10. And that's what's so nice. It means that 2 years ago when we brought him back and we actually signed him for the Bulls, it's actually worked out in our favour, because we've got a lot of good performances out of him in the last 2 years.
Big fixture this weekend, then, so I'm looking forward to that. But I must admit, this last weekend we were supposed to be all off. I found myself engrossed in the Six Nations. It was quite an experience. I must admit, Friday night, I felt sorry for Wales. They played a lot, but they had no reward. France just were... We just were exceptional. I'll try to think of a better word.
There were pockets where Wales were throwing the ball around, trying things. A lot of their movement, however, was just lateral. They were moving from side to side. They weren't really playing with much thrust. And in the end, probably a scoreline that you could make the argument that France should have won by more. They certainly lost a lot of momentum in the second half. There's no doubt. They made all those substitutions. Dupont, your favorite. It was off by the 49th minute or whatever it was. So they did lose a lot of that earlier momentum. It also took them a while to get into the game, to be fair. At the first quarter of an hour, they were attacking, but they weren't scoring points. And then when they did, things happened quickly. And then in the second half, again, they were becalmed a little bit. But in the end, I suppose that scoreline was reflective of how the game panned out.
Yeah. Talking about my favorite player, Antoine Dupont, I thought he actually was very good in... This try he set up was exceptional, but in fact, cross kick as well. But then again, as somebody said to me when I said to them that on the weekend, they said, well, when you're playing against a team that can't even score a point, you've got to look good, especially if that you're that quality of player. I don't want to take it away from him. I just want to say, yeah, I probably had a very good game. He's exceptional for me. But I just thought France in totality, when we spoke last week about their depth coming through the game, they're two wingers who both scored tries. Yeah, they were missing a bunch of players. They didn't seem like they were missing anybody. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do against England on set.
Yeah, of course, they'll be without Romain Intermac, who copped a red card in that game against Wales. There's no doubt. If you saw it initially, you thought, oh, that's a bit silly. But then if you look at it again, like, geez, did you mean it? So, yeah, clear red, no doubt. Don't know how long the ban will be, but I'm expecting Mathieu Jalabert to come in into the pin jersey. That'll be less. Because you want to leave Thomas Ramos at fullback and get Jalabert, who, to be fair to him, when he has had opportunities for France, has played well. So I expect him to start.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm not sure we're going to get the same win like they did at Twickenham 2 years ago. Well, was it 2 years ago? Was it last year? 2 years? Last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so I don't think they're going to get the same win as that, but certainly they're looking like they're favourites for the title. Ireland against England started very slowly and made a lot of mistakes. England, to their credit, forced those mistakes. I thought the way England played in that first half was very good. But Ireland just adjusted in that second half. And New Zealand-born players came to the fore. And James Lowe, Jamieson Gibson-Park really, they were all exceptional on the day. And yeah, it's just the difference between their attack in that second half and England's attack was quite stark.
Yeah, the thing with England in games that really matter, what happens, tends to happen, is that they are always up for a bit of a scrap for a physical challenge, and they rise to the occasion there. But then you just also got the impression there's not enough to their game to really challenge Ireland. And Ireland have these things that they can fall back on. It's hardwired in their DNA now. So, and that essentially was the difference at the end. Ireland were clearly the better side.
Yeah, I thought Tom Curry had a great game. I thought he was really good. And I thought he's, well, in fact, all three loose forwards, but what they gained at the breakdown, they lost in the lineup quite badly. And especially in that second half, it came back to haunt them. So, yeah, England again, I don't know, every time I stick to my theory that they're either bordering on world champions or teetering on disaster. They're never quite in between. And I see the same sort of reactions I expected came this week. Everybody, every columnist I read in the UK has got a plan for how Steve Borthwick can correct everything. I don't know. I don't think they're that far off, but I think to beat France, they're going to have to put up with an exceptional performance because that French team just oozes confidence at the moment.
Yeah. Look, last year, France just about stuttered in front of their home fans against England. They won in the end. They won 33-31, but it was a very jittery performance. It was one of those games where you got the impression that, please let us not lose to England. Instead of just going out there and playing normally, and England ran them close. The last time they played at Twickenham, of course, France won well. 50, they put 50 on the board against England. I don't expect that to happen, but I expect France to win again. But it's again, it goes to, if you could probably go back then to the Ireland game, you've got a team in its development that's much further down the road than is the case with England. And I think that that will find England out again.
Scotland, Italy was pretty much as we expected. The Scots started hard and fast, went up 14-0. Italy came back at the stage, really clawed their way back. But this was always going to be a day that Scotland were going to win. You could see it from the start. And I don't know, Italy, you wish they had a bit more firepower, a bit more grit. But you always get the feeling that the teams with a good strike rate out wide are always going to catch them in the end. So, yeah, not unexpected. And, I think there are much bigger challenges for Scotland awaiting. But Italy can certainly target Wales to make sure they don't finish last.
Absolutely. In fact, Italy boasts two wins over Wales over the last 3 years. Oddly, though, both of them were in Cardiff. They will be absolutely desperate to win in front of their home fans this time. And if they do, and I know there are a few people who already said that this is just about the most important game for Wales in the last decade or two decades. Notwithstanding the fact, of course, Wales have played in World Cup semi-finals and have been involved in some serious matches, deciders in the Six Nations. It is going to, I suppose, fuel the debate about who should be playing in the Six Nations if Wales continue this losing streak. Because if they lose this one, it'll be 14 in a row. And then every prospect of ending the championship with 17 straight losses. Of course, that's not great. Yeah, so both teams will be desperate. As much as Wales would want to obviously get that much-needed win, Italy will want to show that they belong in midfield and would not want to be lumped with Wales. So there are a couple of interesting dynamics to this game. And it should be interesting. I'd still go with Italy. I think Wales will have to play really well.
Yeah, I get the feeling. Yeah, when I look at Wales at the moment, it reminds me a lot of the Alistair Coetzee years of the Springboks, that we talk about big games and they have to win and things like that. It's a disaster if they don't win. But where Wales are at the moment, you can't really call this the biggest game. As you said, they played in Grand Slam deciders, Six Nations deciders, World Cup semifinals. It's a bit ridiculous to say this is the most important game. I also read that and chuckled, but it just almost feels to me that they're in the same spot where the box in a way were when Alistair Coetzee was in charge, and you almost hope that they don't lose. So every game becomes this backs against the wall, must win type thing. And it doesn't really address the larger problems in Welsh rugby, which, and I don't know, it's going to be interesting. I'd also back Italy, and I can't see Wales putting this off. If they do, it's not going to solve many of their problems. Maybe just give them a little bit of relief. But they need some big changes.
It has to start somewhere. So winning Italy will certainly, well, for them, hopefully kickstart something. But yeah, I think you're right. It doesn't ease all the pain and the ills there are, but it'll be a good starting point.
Just saw today, before we started recording, Ireland have announced the summer tour while the Lions are away. They're going to Portugal, Georgia, and I think Romania, I think is the other one. I may be corrected, but nice to see them actually going to some of the European nations for a summer tour rather than going over to America and Canada or something like that, which these sides normally do in these years. It's just nice to see them help the development there of those sides as well.
Absolutely, to be commended. We will have to wait and see how strong that side is. But I think in terms of intent, I think it's a wonderful initiative.
Ireland, I give them a lot of kudos because they bring that emerging Ireland side out to play the Pumas and the Cheetahs every year. So there's definitely stuff going on outside the test window to try and develop younger players. And a lot of teams could learn from that. Anyway, but let's do a quick fire. I think we both say France over England. You want to give a points a margin there?
They France by 8.
I'm going to go a bit more bolder. I'm going to say 22. France by 22. I'm feeling very bold today.
It's just that England do show a lot of mongrel, and I think they'll be up for it for a while. And then again, they won't be enough. Mongrel doesn't necessarily win either game.
Yeah, and as we said, Wales, Italy, I think we both go for Italy. I think it's going to be a close game. It'll be one score.
Yep.
But it'll be Italy for both of us. And then the other one, obviously, Ireland, Scotland. Yeah, I don't see this as the year that Gregor Townsend gets that win. I think Ireland are too street smart. I've got too much in the bank. It's going to be difficult for them.
Yeah, in fact, I'm going to give it to them by like 16 points.
Yeah, I think it'll be a similar game. It'll be close for the first 50-odd minutes, and Ireland will pull away in the end. So, yeah, pretty much to script from what we're expecting in those games. Yeah, other than that, it's just the big game in Cape Town. So if you're in Cape Town, I hope you're going through to watch. They're hoping for a bumper crowd. They're talking about 40,000 tickets already sold. Hopefully they can push that out to near sell out on Saturday. So if you're around there, go and watch, go and support. Even if you don't support the two teams, it's going to be a fantastic day of rugby in Cape Town.
Yeah, I spoke to their CEO last week, and he was very hopeful. In fact, he said they were on course to get a sellout. So let's see if that materializes. I hope they get a big crowd because, look, it's always one of those blue chip fixtures on our domestic calendar. So, yeah, that should be a good occasion.
Well, we'll chat to you next week. It's been a wonderful week again, though. I hope you're going to enjoy the rugby somewhere. Are you going down for the game?
No, I'm not.
Ah, for once. Okay. Cape Town misses out for Liam this time. But so yeah, I'll be watching it every year before it, and we'll be hoping that it's a decent game with not too many injuries. I think that's the one thing I hope for both teams. No more injuries.
Fingers crossed.
Anyway, that's it all for us. We'll chat to you guys next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.